F2. Number 10B.
We have completed the epistle to the Romans, and if we want to classify this epistle within the system of metaphysics, we can see that what Paul was trying to show is to give us the foundation of Christianity and to state first his doctrine of Christianity. Stating a doctrine is always the word. We always have the word when something is stated. And he asks us from the human standpoint to accept this doctrine. And so here within the framework of Christianity, you have first, the very first thing which one always has to do, one has to accept the doctrine, whatever the doctrine then may be. Here it is, the doctrine of Christianity. So he presents in Romans the word as the word. Now, we have seen that, or we haven't seen, I don't know, that spiritual teaching must always be through symbols, as Mrs. Eddy says. No one can teach spiritual things without symbols. But we can see that through the ages, as civilization grows and culture grows, that the symbols rise. And that what in earlier days were crude symbols slowly disappear and are replaced by more finer, more abstract symbols. Paul was writing in the symbols of his day, adapted to the problem of his day. We are living today, 2,000 years later. The world situation and the human situation is not exactly the same. We have not to do with circumcised and not circumcised, and so on. So, but the law of Christianity remains the same. So what we should really try to do is to take the whole message to the Romans and divest it of the old symbols. You say divest? Yeah? Oh, jolly good. I was seeking for another term, but it didn't come, so I had to use that one. And to take away those ruder symbols and close the principle that was lying behind it into the more abstract and more definite symbols of today. And that is really what I like to do in recent years, to lift out the biblical symbol out of themselves and present the idea of it in its new vesture of today, in the vesture of the synonymous terms. So we could, if we divest Romans of all that which is symbolic and just try to get to the bones, what keeps that whole epistle together, I would say that Romans symbolizes this law where he says that by accepting our conscious unity with God, we partake of God's nature. So this law, as you have it on page 1960. I tried also to analyze it in its elements, so that if we have the elements of the law, we really know what is really important about the law. And now we could ask ourselves, as we know that God is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, we can substitute the term God in this law with all the with the seven synonymous terms for God, you see, and then even go further, because we know that each synonymous term for God is just a summary term for all the ideas of that synonymous term, we can infinitely enlarge this message and make it so living and applicable for today. Now, what I have said now in the last 5 minutes is really the most important part of this summer school. If it has been a bit far-fetched to your thought or not quite tangible, then I just like to go over it and explain it again and again. So you see, we could take this law and use it in our new way. And what I have always put down in the book as the elaboration of the law here is just an example how we can elaborate such a law when we know the synonymous terms for God and their ideas, actually. See, there we come to the point where we can no more go any further if we don't know the synonymous terms. Here we are at the border, so to say, where we can only go further with the knowledge of the synonymous terms. So, I have given you an example, and perhaps I just go through it with you and with the book, just as in school, where one has a school book, trying to help you to show what I really mean. And then as we go on from epistle to epistle, then we just can let that be put aside. So, for instance, you see, we could take principle. Now, you know, principle expresses itself through many ideas of principle. Principle is just a summary symbol for many, many ideas of principle. For instance, an idea of principle is, as you know, authority, government, righteousness. So, that first subject of Paul can be put into our language, and you can see, well, if I accept, by accepting our conscious unity with the divine principle, you see, we partake. Now we partake of all the ideas of principle. We partake of the authority, government, righteousness of principle. Actually, if you take other ideas of principle, if you know some more, like system, you see, principle is imperative, is impersonal, then you could always incorporate them here. Just seeing that by accepting in our consciousness, consciously, our unity with principle, well, we partake, really, inwardly, of all that principle is. We partake of the impersonality of principle, we partake of the system of principle, of the imperative nature of principle, of the system of principle, of the scientific nature of principle. Can you see how in this way you can infinitely enlarge really such a law? Now, the same thing is done in every science. You have in every science, you have laws, many laws. You have in physics, say, the law of gravitation, which is a very simple formula. I must confess I don't know it anymore. But it's a very simple formula of, I think, two or three factors, two or three elements, which are stated in its generality. But then you can substitute each element in that law with the values that are necessary in a specific case. And with that one law of gravitation, you can do all sorts of calculation and calculate, say, how quickly a bullet falls down when you shoot it, or anything which has to do with gravitation, how quickly a rocket must come down, and so on, and in which way. Every time, you see, you can use that one simple formula. When you know the elements of that law, you can always just put the corresponding value in place of every one of the factors of this law. Now that is what we really do when we begin to understand the reality in its science. Then all what we do, we calculate in ideas. We compute in ideas. In reality, we have nothing else but that God expresses himself through the ideas of God. And we cannot understand reality and perceive of reality in any other way than through the ideas of reality. But these ideas of reality operate in infinite laws. Now, through a science, we always can systematize the infinite, as we have seen before. And so, here in Romans, we receive that wonderful law, which is always applicable whenever we have the problem of, do we accept that God is constantly coming to us in its fullness so that we partake of it. See, that's the law of Romans. It's a very practical law. It's that law where human sense, mortal sense, says to us, I feel apart from God. I don't feel one with God. I feel apart from God, I feel I'm not one with God, and I feel that God is not one with me. This is the law. You have the first element, say, which says, well, you are one with God through faith, through your conscious unity with God, and being one with God, God is one with you. You partake of God's nature. A very, very, very necessary law. That law which really begins to found us on Christianity. But just always say God and God and God doesn't mean really much. Therefore we elaborate it. But we keep within the strict law, within the strict limit of the law. Therefore, if we know the ideas of God, of the synonymous terms for God, well, you just can sit down in your chair and give you that treatment where you feel no, I don't want to feel apart from God and feel that God is not with me. I handle that problem. I handle it properly. Well, how can I handle it? I can handle it by seeing that by accepting that that I am one in consciousness with the divine principle, therefore that principle always lets me partake of the whole nature of principle, lets me partake, now comes the idea of principle, lets me partake of the authority of principle, of the government of principle, of the self-government of principle, of the authority of principle, of the impersonality of principle, of the system of principle, of the imperative nature of principle, well, then you just go on and see, well, God is also life, therefore, if I am just one in consciousness and see that I am one with life, you see, then I know that life, that I partake of life's nature. Therefore, there I partake of life's nature. I partake of the infinitude of life, of the fullness of life, the newness of life, of the vitality of life, of the spontaneity of life. I partake of the method of life, the exaltation of life. If you know your ideas, if you don't know your ideas, it's always goddy, 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 goddy. That's all it is. G-O-D. G-O-D is the God. It's just three letters in English. It only works with an English God. But ideas, that's eternal. So know your synonyms, know your ideas. These are your tools. Carpenter can't do a thing without his tools. He's no carpenter. He may have wonderful ideas, but if he has not his tools, he can't do a thing. Our tools are ideas. And our tools are to know how these ideas operate in system and law. Science is knowledge reduced to law and incorporated in system. Now here you have it. Here you have your first point in the system, the word as the word of Christianity. And the law of it is that you elaborate that one standpoint, that one sentence, that one law through the seven, and within the seven through all the ideas of the seven. Well, how on earth are we going to think metaphysically and work metaphysically, except we have a solid grounding and a solid line along which to work? If we don't, it's just a hit and miss, and it's just here a little bit, and there a little bit, here a verse, and there a truth, but it is never a whole garment. So, can you see how this law is very practical and applicable? Well, with truth you can say, well, if I'm conscious and I have a conscious unity, Paul calls it faith, if I have a conscious unity with truth and all the ideas of truth, well, then I partake really with all the ideas of truth. Then I partake of the nature of truth as manhood. I partake of the nature of truth as dominion, as standard. I partake of the nature of truth as that which always has dominion over error, analyzes, uncovers, and annihilates error. I partake of all that. If you go further to love, you can see, for instance, as I am consciously conscious, my unity with the fact that in being there is love, then I'm also one. I partake of the nature of love. Therefore, I partake of the nature of completeness, of universality, of salvation, of motherliness, and of motherhood, and of plan, and of design, and of digestion, and disposal, and infinite disposal. You see, you get the tone of love in its variety, in its vastness. And so you can go on with Paul to the tone of soul and see, as I am consciously conscious, my unity with that fact in being which is called soul, I am also one with soul. So I partake of the whole nature of soul. In that consciousness, I partake of the nature of soul in its sinlessness, its unchangeableness. I see the unchangeability of nature and of manhood, the sinlessness of it, the selflessness of it, the common interest within that manhood, all the ideas of soul. Then as spirit, you can say, oh, I would like to be one with that spirit. So I inwardly, with my consciousness, I unite with the fact in being that there is only one spirit, the onlyness of being, and so I partake consciously of that nature of spirit. I partake of the nature that there is only one thing ever going on in being, the onlyness of being, the purity of being, the order of being, the unfoldment of being, the progress of being, the development of being, the fruits of being, the eternal baptism of spirit. That's what one begins to have and partake. And so if I am consciously conscious with a fact called mind in being, the divine mind in being, well, I can't be conscious of it and not partake of the ideas of being. If I am conscious of the one mind, I can't help to be one with that one mind, to partake of the mind of Christ. And I feel I have the mind of Christ, I partake of the mind of Christ. I partake of the action of mind, the power of mind, the forces of mind, the motion of mind, the law of mind, the intelligence of mind, the wisdom of mind. I partake of the nature of infinite apprehension, comprehension, insight, foresight. that goes a bit too quick. Well, you know your synonyms. And the better you know them, the warmer you know them, the rounder you know them, well, the warmer being is, the rounder being is, the more comforting being is. That's quite natural. So you see, with this law of Romans, you just touch only one aspect of Christianity, the first of the 16 standpoints, just one aspect where you just first establish within yourself that you are one with God and that God is one with you. Just that. And that's pretty good already. See, it already handles the claim. See, that's the practicality of it. It handles within our consciousness the claim that we are separate from God. Paul says, who can separate us from the love of God? Can anything separate us from the love of God? Anything present or future, high or low? I can't repeat what he said. I never can repeat anything literally in the Bible, in the textbook. Well, I don't like it. I like to get the touch of it, the understanding of it, and that's much more than memorizing things. But the touch is necessary. Now, have I made myself clear about what I mean with a law? You see, I went through the seven synonymous terms always sticking to the same two elements, namely the first element, which I said I accept my conscious unity with the synonym with God. The second element was, and that makes me partake of the nature of God. Very simple. Very simple. And so, this is what I would like to show you in every epistle, and show you then how these laws fit one to the next, join one to the next in an ordered sequence. They are not just isolated laws that we will see as we go along. All right, well, if you are happy about that, I go on. Little by little, as we do the epistles, it will sink in. Now, we go to the second epistle, namely to the first epistle to the Corinthians. The Corinthians were tough boys, you know. You may have seen when you read the epistle, he really had a lot there. He recruited his Christians from the worst part of the city, from the harbor, from thieves and drinkers, from the worst he could find, and he made Christians out of them. He was an enormous man, that Paul. First, he made himself a Christian after he had persecuted the Christians to death. Afterwards, he made out of every man a Christian, from the drinker and from the thieves up to the governors. He was an amazing man. Well, how did he do it? He said, well, all what I do through the gift of grace. That's what is the subject in Corinthians. He said, I do these things through the gift of grace, because only through the gift of grace we are what we are. And it's only through the gift of grace anyone is what he really is. And because grace is from God, everyone has much, has as much as God has. So this gift of grace is really something which we should claim for us and for everybody. He really shows that I thank God for all the enrichment that has come to you in Christ. By the grace of God, I am what I am. So he begins to show that, as I have shown in Romans, you see, that that law of Romans makes everyone partake of God's nature. Therefore, it enriches everyone with the whole of God's nature. And now, having seen that, and having seen that there is, therefore, what Romans said, always that constant flow from God to man, and to every man that believes, as there is always that in being, a fact which calls that there is a constant flow from principle to idea, from God to man, he therefore asks us to claim this fact for us in every situation. He makes now a step further, he goes a step further than Romans and says, that what Romans has told you as a statement, go now and claim it for yourself. Go and build in every case, in every problem, under every circumstance, build on this new law of Romans. So you see, Corinthians builds on Romans, saying more or less nothing more than saying, that which you have seen in Romans, take it and build on it, claim it and build on it, don't let it go. See? So, for other foundations, he says in Corinthians, can no man lay than that is laid which is in Christ. He said, there is no other foundation but that law which I have laid in Romans. That's our cornerstone. That law which I have taken through with you 5 minutes ago, that is the cornerstone. But if we don't take it and make it our basis for every problem, for every thing that comes into our life, well, then we don't claim it, and then it doesn't begin to live in us. So he asks us in Corinthians to make this law of Romans the foundation on which we build. Now, you can naturally see that if you do that, that something happens. Because what do you do if you don't claim it? See, if we don't claim that divine law of Romans, well, then we claim something else because we live just the same. So instead of an old sense of life, whatever that old sense of life may have been, no matter really according to what guiding principle or to what guiding law we have lived before, the moment we accept the law of Romans and build our life on it, naturally our life changes. Our life changes. We can't be the old and do something new. And in Corinthians, we see how he shows that if we are in the measure, as we claim the law of Romans, that begins to change our style of life.